I wish that there was some spotlight on mental health and well-being when we started out as nurses. 15, 16 years later, and me sitting here at 36 years old, like the Gen Zers, they're like, yeah, I go to therapy. And I'm like, yeah, I started therapy 2 years ago. It's the best thing ever. Everyone should be in therapy.
Everybody, welcome to the ICU Thriving Podcast. I'm gonna call this season two, even though season one was very short. I feel like we had some highs and some lows. We learned some things, got some feedback. So I want to start this season two, episode one. I don't have like a title for it. I guess the title could be Code Blue, maybe something like that.
Surviving Code Blues.
Cool. Yes, surviving. That'll get the people going. I usually have my friends Dana and Melissa and Morgan with me, but I have a special guest today and I'm so excited. So I do want her to introduce herself, even though I didn't tell her about that. But I'm going to introduce her first as Ashley, who is my nurse best friend in general, but nurse best friend because that is where we met in an ICU. And I'm pretty sure we connected in the nutrition galley over being NSYNC and closet Taylor Swift fans. Is that correct?
And Pittsburgh Steeler fans.
Pittsburgh Steeler fans. Yes. Yes. I feel like we just lost some listeners. I feel like they're like, and
done. Yeah, well.
But yes, that was where we clicked. And then from then on, man, I feel like it's just been nurse besties ever since.
Well, thank you for having me. I am so stoked to be here. Yes, so my name is Ashley Jones. I've been a nurse for 16 years.
Oh my gosh, 16?
I know. Girl. It makes me feel old. All of which has been in ICU, critical care setting. My passion is education and everything within the walls of an ICU. I took kind of like a supervisor education role for a few years, smack dab in the middle of COVID.
And best time to change it up.
Oh, yeah. But I did get to live out my passion for a few years. And now I'm doing something completely different. I'm a clinical liaison and I still get to walk around ICUs and chat with all my, you know, friends, but it's a little bit different. But that's kind of my background.
I feel like that might be the way to go. You know, whenever you get burned out on everything, just be able to still be in it, but not in it, you know?
It's kind of like the best of both worlds. I still get to, you know, have, I don't know, relationships with patients and colleagues and, you know, nurses. But I, unfortunately, wear dress clothes every day. That's the only downfall. But yeah, it's the best of both worlds.
I love that. All right. So I will also give a little shout out to Ashley, though. She is one of the best cardiac nurses that I've ever worked with. And it's probably because I don't know a ton about cardiac, or maybe I just refuse to learn about it. Just kidding. I know about it, but man, she is so much better than I am.
And that's why I leave you with brains, because I do not like neuro. Yes. But yeah.
You know
what?
There's a reason that there are specialties in nursing.
Absolutely.
That is why. All right. So we're going to learn a little bit more about Ashley here on her song choice. So one of the things on season two that we're going to do is we are going to have a CPR song choice of the episode. So I think she might have a couple for us, which is perfectly fine with me. But Ashley, if you were needing to do CPR, what are the songs that you would have in your head?
I have two. Because I like all of the current, I'm a music junkie, so I'm going to go with Not Like Us.
Okay, all right.
Okay, that's like current. Yep. But I'm an absolute Queen freak.
Oh my gosh.
So I have to go, with the classic, Another One Bites the Dust.
Yes, absolutely.
And for the listeners, Just so you know, when I say I'm a Queen junkie, I literally dressed up as Freddie Mercury for Skills Fair one year at the hospital. So,
and it was amazing.
Mustache and all.
It was amazing. She did such a great job. All right. So those songs, just so everybody's aware, because it's like what the CPR is supposed to be 100 to 120 beats per minute. But I believe now the scientific, what evidence-based practice is 110 beats per minute is what you are supposed to do. So those songs, along with there's actually a Spotify playlist that literally is 110 beats per minute. It's not supposed to be for CPR. But we used it for that. And so you can find it online, but those two are perfect. I love that. I can't play them because I'd probably have to pay somebody. But go look them up or get them in your head. I love that. All right. So the next thing that I want to talk about real quick is just some nursing news, because I feel like there's, we talk about all of the normal stuff all the time. Like we talked about code blues and we talk about new nurses in the ICU and stuff, but we never talk about what's actually happening. And there is a hospital review that, if you guys have not heard of, Becker's Hospital Review, Becker, like B-E-C-K-E-R. They have a podcast as well, but they also have email lists that you can just get hospital nursing news, all that kind of stuff sent to your email. And I get probably at least one or two every week or so. And it just kind of keeps you up to date. And so here's a couple of things that I started looking at on here and I thought was really interesting. So the first thing I want to talk about is that new generation of nurses, Gen Z, which I have to laugh because the one article that I started looking at, it said Gen Z employees include new college graduates and those with a few years of professional experience, the oldest being 28. I'm like, oh, I'm definitely not Gen Z. But Gen Z, man, I will tell you what, they are changing the game in all aspects. So I love the TikTok videos. Have you seen the TikTok videos of like, it's that teenager scared the living out of me? But it's like a nurse and she's like gulping down like two, like shotgunning like two bangs before she clocks in or something. And you're just kind of staring at it. You're like, oh gosh, there they are.
I have not, but that is true.
Yes.
And I feel like, really, if you pay attention to how they interact and do things within the unit or a hospital or whatever setting they're in, they are not taking tips from us and how we grew up in the nursing world as baby nurses. Mm-hmm. It is completely different.
Yes, it is.
In mostly good ways. It's different.
The two articles that I found from this Becker's Hospital Review. All right, Gen Z, they are not asking for things. You know how we would get into, you know, you'd get offered a job and they'd say, okay, we'll pay you this amount of money. And you said, oh, I'd really love that job, but is there any way that you could go a little bit higher? They don't do that anymore.
No.
They demand things. And on here, I have a few things that they demand, which I think is, to be honest, I feel like there's probably some people rolling their eyes, and I got to be honest, I probably rolled my eyes at some point too. And I'm like, you know, you can't demand things. People don't, they're not going to say that, but listen to some of the things they're demanding. Okay. So they are demanding a head start on retirement savings. So listen, it took me a while to contribute to my 401.
I didn't even know what a 401k was when I started out as a nurse.
And you and me both.
And these nurses, they are walking into their interviews and they are completely informed.
Yep. Yeah. So they want to contribute more to their 401s. They want to know how to do it. They want to know what the company offers. They want to know if that's negotiable. Is that a word? That's not a word.
Let's make it a word.
Okay. Negotiable. Let's see. What else do they want? They want student loan debt repaid. Which I think that happens more often than not now. I feel like
yeah.
There's a decent amount of plans out there. I mean, if you want nurses, that's what you're going to have to offer.
Absolutely.
Even to millennials and people above that. But so they want loan repayment. They want help on budgeting, investing, overall well-being is one of the big things. So they don't want just paid time off. They want the whole kit and caboodle. They want mental health days. They want everything. They want to know how to save money. They want to pay off loans. They want help with home ownership, retirement, children's educational expenses, like you name it.
And I feel like these are even conversations with very young people entering into the workforce. And I think it happens for multiple reasons. I think that true, like Gen Zers have watched their parents struggle, maybe financially. They've watched their grandparents not really knowing like what benefits they're going to have for retirement. They've watched their family and friends push retirement because they financially can't afford to retire.
Yeah.
And I think like reading the article, I'm in agreement that the Gen Z nurses of our world, they really are looking at work-life balance. They don't want to work until they physically can't walk anymore.
Right.
Like they want true work-life balance. They want to put in their time, put away money, and retire early and enjoy life. And what?
Can I cut us on this? Yeah, sure.
Like what the hell is wrong with that?
Right. And I think that, is there a generation, I know this is a dumb question. Is there a generation between millennials and Gen Z? Is it like Gen Y?
I'm not,
whatever it is, between
I'm not
that.
Real up on,
I don't either,
but
I'm sure there's something.
I just know I'm a millennial.
I know. I never considered myself a millennial until I started looking at it. I was like, no, I'm a millennial.
Yeah. Same.
I feel like that flipped because I remember probably about 5 years ago, the big thing was go do your retirement stuff. Now you can work until you're dead. Like, I didn't have that, but I know people that were like, no, I'm going to go travel and I'm going to go see things. I'll take out loans. I'll do whatever, credit cards. And then when I'm done, then I'm just going to start working and I'll just keep working forever.
Yes.
And it's flipped now, which to be honest, it should flip. I mean, that's
smart.
I don't know about all that. Just going out and doing things now. I'm like, oh no, but it has, it's flipped. And honestly, I look at their things and I'm like, get it, go do it, because that's exactly what needs to be happening.
And I feel like they know what they want. I'm going to go back to a Queen song. Like they want it all and they want it now. Like they do. They know what they want. They walk into the interview and like you said, they're not asking questions. They're basically making demands of like, these are expectations of what I expect as my employer, this is what I want. And I'm not going to say yes. And here's the thing. It's kind of like there's this massive nursing shortage. It's really hard for employers to say no.
That's the thing. Yes, that they can do it.
Yeah.
There is. And, you know, it's funny because I've heard some people say there's not a shortage. There's just people that don't want to do it. But it's kind of like a win is a win. A shortage is a shortage. If you don't have the people that want to do it, you don't have them. You don't have the nurses.
Exactly.
And I mean, even at the hospitals that will provide the best benefits, you still got a shortage of nurses. All right. So yeah, Gen Z, man, keep it rolling. You got anything you want to add about Gen Z?
I have to touch on like how they like come alive when it's about mental health.
Yeah.
Because that was part of the article too. So yeah. I just have to take a second. Mm-hmm. I wish that there was some spotlight on mental health and well-being when we started out as nurses. Mm-hmm. There was none.
No.
Like you could have had the worst shift. Maybe, you know, your patient died on your shift and it was like, all right, well, I'm going to have these feels for 30 seconds. I'm going to wrap it up, toss it aside, and I'm not going to think about it.
Yep.
You didn't really debrief, and you sure as heck didn't really do anything about it as a person. 15, 16 years later, and me sitting here at 36 years old, like the Gen Zers, they're like, yeah, I go to therapy. And I'm like, yeah, I started therapy 2 years ago. It's the best thing ever. Everyone should be in therapy. But like I just feel like that is something that's a positive thing that they've brought out to the spotlight.
It was like a stigma of needing mental health days, of being sick, Like any of those things, whenever we started nursing, you didn't call off.
No.
You came to work sick. You pushed through. You were weak if you needed a day to breathe.
Yeah.
And you were almost judged if somebody knew that you just took the day off because you had a hard assignment or whatever it is. Now, listen, I'm not saying take 15, you know, weeks off because of, you know, a hard assignment. But there are resources now for that. And hospitals are pushing more towards that because they know that not only Gen Z, but now millennials want it too, because we know it's there.
Yeah.
And we know that it's something that is available and it's great.
And we're like, wow,
I know.
We can actually talk about that. We can actually decompress. We can have
feelings.
What?
I'm sad about a code that I had. I can be sad.
I can be sad.
I know.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
I want to cry now.
No. No, it's true. It is. And it's they don't even know that they're doing the Lord's work with it.
You know? Right?
They just, that's what, I guess, you can just, what, think? Probably not millennials for raising them. That's probably a little too close. Maybe older millennials. I don't know. Thanks, older millennials.
Yeah, yeah.
You're doing thanks. A great job, too. All right, let's talk about some AI real quick. I don't know how widespread this is because at our hospitals, I will say, virtual nursing or AI is, I think it's just getting started. Now, we've had Doc in a Box for a while. So you've had, if there's a patient that is, we live in West Virginia, so there are a lot of rural areas. If your patient's having a stroke, you know, 4 hours away from a hospital, we have those things where you can literally pop open a laptop or like a, you know, iPad, and there's a doctor in, you know, wherever trying to help treat that patient. Like,
yeah.
We have that. We've had it for a while, but it's becoming more. So this article, again, that I got from Becker's, was basically talking about hospital rooms and what makes them intelligent. And they're saying at a Cleveland-based university hospital, they have high-powered cameras to allow virtual nurses to zoom into the room. And AI technology can detect falls. What do you think over there?
All right. So I'm an optimist, but also a realist. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, I did bedside nursing for a long, long time. I feel like AI, there's a place for it. And we certainly are just starting to see how it will affect all of us in healthcare. But at the end of the day, I still feel like there are certain situations or patients or whatever, what have you, where AI still will never replace a person being at the bedside able to touch a patient.
Yeah.
Now, sure, like if we're talking about AI to detect falls before a patient falls out of the bed, that's great. But there's so many policies and procedures already in place in institutions where I feel like, for the most part, it suffices. So I don't know. I feel like I'm in the middle of the road.
Let me tell you what. This is my dream. So, you're never going to replace the nurse or the doctor at the bedside. That's just, it's not, I can't even imagine if you just had robots rolling around and you had meemaws and you had everybody else that's there. It's not going to work. You got to have actual people at the bedside. But listen, just go with me on this, okay? Doctors have scribes, right?
Yeah.
They talk into a microphone and somebody else on the other side spits out, which is amazing because I've heard these doctors speak, but they spit out exactly what they say and then that doctor signs it and that's it. Now, if you had a nurse in the room doing their assessment and they're either vocalizing it or this either AI or virtual nurse or whoever is watching them do it, make them chart for them.
Oh, 100%.
Can you imagine if you didn't have to chart?
Well, yeah.
And you had either AI, I don't care. I mean, because you're going to look at it. So you still have to sign it off. You still have to, you know, complete other tasks of it, I'm sure, whatever. But can you imagine
It would drastically change your entire day.
You wouldn't have a shortage anymore.
You honestly, probably not.
I'd run back to the bedside.
Back to the bedside. Come on. Yeah. Someone else does my charting. That takes half of the day away.
Sold. Can you listen? And I guess in my unit, like, I'm just sitting here thinking, like, the patient care would be outstanding. Like, the there would be no more falls because people are right there. I mean, yes, you would have some issues. You have you have issues with everything. But I'm just imagining if there was something that would chart for me, I'm sold. I'm sold.
You know, here's the thing. I've been a staff nurse. I've been a supervisor. You know, I've lived both worlds. So I feel comfortable in saying this, that patient care would improve if charting wasn't so cumbersome.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
So I completely agree. And it's funny because they've tried to do other small things to make charting less cumbersome. They've included things in Epic, and I'm sure other hospitals have other things. But it's just that fact that when you have a patient that is constantly changing, can you imagine the amount of money that they would save with nurses just not being there until 8, 9, 10 o'clock charting?
Oh, like, it'd be monumental.
I mean, it would pay for itself.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say it would be the single greatest invention of nursing, because wireless monitoring would be the single greatest invention. And if I can figure out how to do that, I'd be like up there with Einstein, I think. But this, having somebody chart for you or something or whatever, done.
Mind blown.
Mind blown. Amazing. Done. I would love it. Love it. All right. You ready to talk about codes?
Let's do it.
All right. So first, I do want to thank our sponsor. Seven Ranges Radio has graciously provided us the equipment here so that we can record the sultry sounds of our voice and be able to provide this podcast to nurses, to anybody that wants to listen. And we thank them so much for it. And we are so excited that they are continuing to partner with us for season two, even though they don't really know it. But here it is. Here it is. So thank you again, Seven Ranges Radio. All right. So, two questions for you. First, when do you remember your first code that you were involved in? And
yes.
Two, was it your patient, or do you remember the first time that it was your patient?
It was my patient.
It was your patient. Really?
Yes.
Whoa.
I stuck. Yeah, it did. It really did. So I started off in a very, very small Royal Hospital. However, we actually had very, very critical patients. And so I started my nursing career there. I was probably 2 months in, and I was a baby grad, okay?
Oh my God.
Straight out of nursing school. I didn't even know how to pull up, like, solute Medrol out of a vial. Like, I knew nothing.
Yeah.
My preceptor and I, you know, got report. This patient's sick. He's intubated, you know, whatever. Halfway through our morning, heart rate drops. He's in PEA, which I didn't know he was in PEA at the time, right? Because I'm a newbie. Oh, hadn't even had ACLS yet.
You're staring at the monitor. You're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Mind you, I teach ACLS classes now.
16 years later. It's
a little, humorous. So completely froze, you know, the typical response. And I remember standing there. I can still, like, envision it in my mind, like, everyone coming in. And I stood behind the crash cart and I wrote on a paper towel. Like, I was the recorder, but I was writing stuff. I really had no idea what I was writing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My first code that I witnessed was in nursing school. And it was at a smaller hospital, but it wasn't super small. It still had an ICU, and it still, I mean, I was in nursing school, so I was just trying to figure out where the bathroom was. But it still had an ICU. We were on the med-surg floor, and they called it, and my clinical instructor was like, okay, go ahead, you go. And I was like, oh no, where's room? You know, whatever it was, like 342, whatever. And I'm asking everybody, even like visitors, I'm like, do you know where this room is? So I finally made it there, and it was a code that had family involved. So I didn't really know what I was walking into. All I know is that I walked in the room, and I can give the biggest shout out to this respiratory therapist, and I have no idea who it was. I don't know where they are now in the world, but they like tucked me under their wing and was like, here, come up towards the vent. Like, I'll walk you through this. And I was like, okay, thanks. You know? And they started kicking people out of the room because, you know, that's what you do. Because there's, you know, 8,000 people that show up to the code. And they started saying, anybody that doesn't need to be here, get out. And I'm like, oh, no, it's me. And he's like, no, shh, just stay. And I was like, OK. And he was so nice. And he let me stay and walked me through it. And this was a code that was very unexpected and had the unfortunate outcome. And so I didn't help. I didn't, you know, I just stood there. Was just, you know, kind of just watching. Once everything ended, I thanked my respiratory therapist, Angel.
Yeah, and I godsend, yeah, really.
It's amazing, yes. And then I got out and I was good until I saw my clinical instructor and she goes, how was it? You know, so excited. And I just burst into tears. And I couldn't even come up with a word. And she, I remember this too. And I don't even remember her name, but she was so nice too. But she literally took a chocolate bar out of her pocket and said, go take a break. And we like, I think we just got back from lunch, but I was like, okay. And I remember sitting in their break room and I'm just like eating it. And I'm like, I gotta get it together. Like, what am I doing? And I ate the chocolate bar and I felt better. And I went out and I was able to talk through it. But that was my first time watching somebody basically, you know, pass away and us doing our best efforts to save them. But my first code did not happen until I was in ICU. And that was about 3 or 4 years into my nursing career. Cause I was on a med-surg floor working prior to that. And we had a few like code calls, but they weren't real, you know, like somebody fell asleep and, you know, was sleeping, somebody had a low blood sugar, you know, like, you know, things that it wasn't that big a deal. But my first one was a shift, and you will never guess it, that I picked up just to be nice.
Always, always. It screws you every time.
And I remember that it was a shift that our darling charge nurse asked and begged for me to pick up. And I was like, you know what? I can. That's fine. I'm just doing 7 to 3, though. And then I called him back an hour later because I was like, oh, I got to take Archie to the vet, my dog that was just barking before. I have to take him to the vet at 3. So I have to leave at 2. Like, do you still want me to come in? And they're like, we'll take any help we can get. That's fine. Whatever. I was supposed to be there for like 7 hours or less. And it was a very unexpected code for me. I was confident, but not super confident. I was off orientation, obviously, but it was probably like a year into it. And this patient, I just remember the heart rate. I was charting in the room, you know, because we didn't have AI. I was charting in the room and I just watched the heart rate go, you know, 80, 60, 50, 40. And I'm like, why is it doing that? And I peeked my head out to that lovely charge nurse that begged me to pick up. And I was like, hey, will you come down here? And she comes down and I said, I don't think this is good. And she goes, oh, no, honey, it's not. And we, you know, we coded and I did my best to help and did, you know, compressions and meds and blah, blah, blah. Which, by the way, if it's your patient coding, don't do compressions. You need to be telling other
Please.
People what's going on.
Please.
You need to be taking a more of a lead role in this because you know the patient, nobody else does. But I remember we did get that patient back. But that was another one where family came in and it was just hard.
It'd be overwhelming.
It was. And I remember everybody pushing me out because they knew I had to be out by 3, like to get my dog. So everybody, it was super nice. I remember everybody taking over for me and it was great. And, you know, that ICU, I can say was one of the best ICUs I've worked in and everybody had each other's back in it. But yeah, that was my first one. And yeah, of course, it was a day that I was just trying to be nice and pick up.
Was I working?
I don't remember you actually in that. I don't think so.
I don't remember
that. I don't think so. I think it... I can't remember who. I would just remember everybody was nice. I can't remember.
I must have been at home enjoying my day off.
I probably text you and I was like, you'll never guess. All right. So, we talked about your scenario. We talked about all of that. What I think the thing that I have the hardest time with that people don't talk about is not necessarily that right the moment after, but like the shift after or days after. Say that if you do have a couple days off, did you have emotions through those next couple either days or a week or so after your first code?
Yeah, and I think we all do, whether or not we acknowledge or talk about it. But yeah. And I, oddly enough, I started journaling and like writing down like special, I guess. I mean, the first code's not really special. It didn't have a great outcome either. But, you know, like I kind of wrote stuff down along the way to help process that, because I didn't have any, like, I wasn't like a nurse's aide or anything prior to nursing school. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any of that background. So, my first patient deaths were, they were hard. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I remember it wasn't a code situation. It was a patient that just passed away, and there wasn't family present. So I was at the bedside when it happened. And that was the first person that I've ever seen pass away. And it took me, I mean, I remember crying over it weeks later. Like, I just wasn't used to it. I wasn't used to it, you know? And it's one of those where, especially if you're a brand new nurse, especially in the ICU, but you are out of school, you've never seen maybe a family member pass away or been to a funeral, or even if you have, it's been a while or anything, that first patient passing away is rough.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how they pass away.
Like, no.
That situation is rough, to say the least.
One of my other like first patients in the ICU who passed away, like I know her name. Like, I can vividly see her face. Like, I tell her story all the time. Because, yeah, it hits you in a different way. And I didn't have any other experience other than ICU. So on the flip side, you know, ICU nurses are wonderful. They're excellent. And I love that field of nursing. But also, we have a really bad tendency to be like, oh, that's part of the job. And yeah. we turn kind of like a blind eye to that. And I mean, that's how we kind of both grew up in our nursing worlds.
Exactly. I know now, because, you know, you had the educator role and now you're a little bit on the flip side. I'm still in the educator role. And I know when I have these brand new nurses that have to go through that, that's one of my first things is checking on them multiple times. You know,
yeah.
Are you okay? Let's debrief again. There's nothing else that you could have done. This is what we did. This is, you know, the best that you did. That's what we asked for. Because it lingers with you. And I don't think that people want to recognize that, or they just don't in general.
And everyone deals with things differently. Some people might be fine after a day or another shift. Some people might not be okay for a month. So, everyone, it's important to know that everyone.
That's Gen Z and there's mental health days.
Yes, it's everywhere. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So I have to ask you a question. In a code, so you're back at the bedside.
Okay.
Okay. And a code is happening. What role are you running to?
Leader.
You want to lead it.
Yeah.
You're getting a code leader sticker on you.
That's yes.
Our hospital, and I think it's silly. But
I want a sticker.
You are. I'll grab you a sticker next time we're there. Yes, you're leading the code. All right. What are you running away from?
The recorder. I just, even as a bedside nurse and then kind of like transitioning through the years, nope, it's not for me. I will put someone else in that role and I'm good.
It's funny. And I think that that's just nursing in general. Like, we were talking about specialties, but it's funny because there are still ICU nurses that will run towards the recorder. Like, that's all they want to do. They just want to give me the dry erase marker and the whiteboard or the window. And I'm ready for it. Let's go. And then you have the flip side. Now, I don't think I've ever met somebody that runs towards the crash cart for the meds.
No. And the crazy thing is that, like, and I, okay, I know we're talking about CPR and compressions, whatever, but like compressions aren't sexy.
Nope.
Mm-mm. You know, like it's like the nitty gritty, wetty work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's what people love to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I'll do compressions, obviously, yep. But it's not my go-to.
You're mm-mm. leading it. What am I running to? I probably would instinctively like run towards like the code leader like thing.
Yeah.
I feel like I would probably just step into that. I am a compressions one. Like I like to do compressions. It depends on if you feel comfortable with the defibrillator. Like true. I do now, I'm running to that.
Yeah.
But there are probably, I'm going to throw out a number of probably at least 70% of ICU nurses that are like, I don't feel super comfortable with it because you don't use it very frequently.
Yeah.
It's not something that I would probably run away from recorder as well. My writing is terrible. I do not listen to people that well. In that setting, I feel like I would not be the person to do that. Also, I would not want to keep time.
No.
Like, I wouldn't want to be that person that's like, okay, epi time. Which I will say too, that is something that hospitals are getting better at. So like, I know for Epic, like we use Epic at our hospital and there is a code narrator. Yeah. Now, nobody wants to use it because they like to write on, you know, on the window, but that has an Epi calculator or clock on it. So like, as soon as you click Epi given, it starts the clock for you.
And it's crazy to kind of think about. Previously, we had tried to implement code narrator mm-hmm. a couple different times. And it works well, but at the time, like nurses still preferred to write and then go back and back because in the moment it's difficult, especially if you're not familiar with it.
But to find things and to make sure that like, I can't imagine you're trying to put in the epi and you're trying to figure out the doctor that's ordering it and who's giving it. And then you're also trying to put in that you intubated the patient and then you have to, the LDOL opens and then you're like, oh, well, where's the mouth? You know, you're clicking on the mouth and you're clicking on the size and you're like, okay, wait, we're giving amio now.
It's
okay.
For epi again.
Yeah. And you're halfway through and then it's freezing or something. And you're like, it's the, you know, the spinning wheel of death on your mouse. Yes. And you're like, what is happening? I get it. But yeah, I don't want to record either. I don't want to do it. All right. So if you had to give advice to either new or experienced nurses, whoever it is, about codes, like say they are just downright nervous. What is something that you could say to them that might be helpful?
I heard this as a baby grad from my nurse manager. Okay. And it has stuck with me for the last 16 years. And I've told every single nurse that I've ever like precepted or educated the same thing. And that is, if you're running into a code or if your patient is the one coding, to breathe, because the worst has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Your patient is dead.
Yep.
There's nothing worse than that.
Worse. Nope.
Yeah. So the biggest thing is, again, to breathe and realize in that moment, in that second, that the worst thing has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that kind of grounds us so you can make good choices in the next few minutes that are critical to your patient's life.
I think that's absolutely true. I was actually going to joke about it and be like, they're not getting any deader.
Yeah, seriously. And I've said that too. Yes. Yes.
I agree. I think too, when you step in the room, I will say my preceptor from MedSurg, I'll just give a shout out to Bob. His idea of whenever a patient would code, he told me, if you don't want to do anything in the code, you start chucking furniture out of the room. You start making room.
What? Who says that? I mean, Bob says it, and kudos to Bob.
Because, well, again, we were a med-surg floor that did not, you know, patients didn't, they didn't, shouldn't have coded on our floor, in which in my 2 years, they didn't code on our floor. But he was like, I'm getting stuff out of the room so everybody can get in and everybody can do what they need to do. Bring the crash cart. And he said, here goes the bedside table. Here goes the recliner. He's just shoving things out the door. And I'm like, I don't think I want that role, but I appreciate you for making room for everybody.
Now, was Bob removing furniture when Bob should have been doing compressions?
I don't know if Bob was in a code situation, but that was what his idea was of helpful. You know, like you have the flush nurse that just has like the box of flushes and they're like, okay, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I can't take everybody have a flush. It's fine. That was Bob. I think he was trying to make room for everybody.
Well, kudos to Bob.
You know what? Again, we didn't have one. So there you go.
Love it.
Oh my gosh. All right. Any other advice that you have?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear it.
If it's your patient or you're the first one in the room, start compressions. So many nurses, and it doesn't matter if they're new, some experienced nurses that are not frequently involved in codes, they freeze in that moment. They don't know what to do.
Yep.
Put your hands on the patient and do compressions.
Yep. Even if you see up on the monitor, or if your patient isn't on the monitor and they're not responsive and you feel for a pulse and you can't feel one, start compressions.
Yes.
Because the worst thing that's going to happen is that they're going to grab you and say, stop doing that. And then you're not going to have to do it anymore.
Exactly. And I'm going to be the geek that says high quality CPR saves lives.
But it does.
Period.
That is. And I think I've seen, like, and I can try, to find videos and like try to post them on the Instagram. But like I sound like I'm 90 on the Instagram. But you can see it, like when you push down and then you let it recoil, the amount of actual like circulation that is still going through the body is, I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, like absolutely.
You can essentially bring somebody back, but you're also circulating meds. You're doing all kinds of things with the CPR. That's what you got to keep doing.
The chance of a successful outcome skyrockets with good quality BLS, period.
My advice, and it comes from the almost not like it wasn't a code, but it was one of those where we thought it was, is if you have an AMBU bag, you have to make sure it's actually hooked up to oxygen.
You know, that it's helpful. It is helpful, especially if patient's hypoxic.
Yeah, I didn't know that. My first ever, like, I don't remember. I think this was the sleeping guy. I can't remember. But we had the AMBU bag, yes. And I started, you know, squeezing the bag, and it wasn't hooked up to anything. So my lovely charge nurse was like, you know, pop it in the oxygen and let it roll. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's how that works.
Well, I mean, you could say you were still giving some rescue breaths. Yeah,
it's like CPAP mode.
Listen, I also have to say, and I know you touched on this earlier, if it is your patient, number one, do not leave the room.
Right.
A very long time ago, the primary nurse literally left a room that I responded to. And we found her outside smoking. Like, maybe that is how she dealt with the stress of the event. But if you're the primary nurse, you can't leave the room.
No.
Mm-mm. Nobody knows that patient better than you. Exactly. And you're going to be expected to give the responding code team, stat team, whatever you want to call it, and the physician or mid-level basically report on the patient what's been going on. So you can't leave. Don't leave the room ever.
Don't leave the room. Nope. Mm-mm.
And also, like, you see, you,
and another thing.
Yeah. You get me on a roll. Be open to constructive feedback.
That's a great point.
And that goes for new nurses and experienced nurses. Because if someone professionally says in the code, like critiques your compressions or, you know, what have you, that's a good thing.
And here's the thing, is that it's going to happen. You listen, if you have never done compressions before, 10 seconds in, you're like, oh boy, I don't know if I'm going to do this anymore. I'm not going to make it 2 minutes or whatever. The five cycles are like, right. Not going to happen.
It feels like 30 minutes by the time absolutely 2 minutes not is up.
It's like the Office episode whenever they're trying to learn CPR and Kevin does it for like 5 seconds. He's like, just call it. I can't do it anymore. It is. It's hard. And you don't realize how some people push too hard, but you don't realize how hard you do have to push until you're doing it.
Absolutely. So
it's somebody is going to, if they are doing a good job being either your CPR coach or code leader or whoever it is, they should be critiquing your CPR.
If they're not, and everyone in the room knows that something's wrong, there's a problem.
There's a
and
problem.
It's a disservice to your patient.
Well, yeah.
Literally.
They're the ones dead trying to come back. I mean, let's do the best we can, you know?
And okay, last thing for me. Sorry. Okay,
no.
You get my brain going.
I love it.
Debriefing.
Mm-hmm.
Also feedback for me, like debriefing, even if it's, I don't know, even if it's just like a minute, or you get to step off the unit and you can chat with your preceptor or, you know, a supervisor or someone there to support you. Debriefing is huge. I'm going to go back to the Gen Z mentality. All feelings are valid. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a good outcome, it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to walk away for a minute if you have coverage for your other patients.
And you know what I found? It's just, I guess a lot with more newer nurses is that they want the feedback. And if you don't give it to them, they feel lost.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like a grade. Like they are expecting some sort of grade or feedback for how they did. And when you leave them in limbo, they're like, did I do okay? Did I miss something? Should I have done something different? And just having that, even like you said, 1 minute debrief, being able to say, hey, this code went great. Some things we can work on are making sure we do, I don't know, closed loop communication, or making sure that we talk to people when they're doing CPR. I mean, that's what people crave. That's what I would crave if I was in an intense situation right now. I want somebody to tell me, yes, you did this correctly. Let's work on this. Next time, you know, let's think of our H's and T's sooner or whatever it
yeah.
is. You know, that's, I mean, debriefing is almost just as important as having the code.
It is. And it's not done like it should be.
No, it's not.
Because of the fast pace
mm-hmm.
of the units
yeah.
or floors, whatever.
And we still have that mentality that we talked about where people are like, okay, it happened. We got a pulse back. See you later.
And it's also like, well, yeah, this is sad that this happened, but let's do our post-mortem, get them to the morgue. Because
we got somebody in the ER.
We got to fill the bed.
Yeah.
Which is so crummy.
Yeah.
But that's real life.
If you would take 2 minutes to just debrief to say, hey, that went as well as it could have.
Yes.
I mean, that one nurse or two nurses or whoever that was their first code might be able to say, okay, I can breathe because I did the best I could. And that was that was all I gave. And that was the right stuff to do. Rather than say, I don't know what just happened, but the person died, and I don't know if it's my fault or not.
Exactly.
I think, yeah, debriefing's important. You got anything else in there? You're like, I could talk another 2 hours about it if you really wanted me to. I think that was... That was great. I mean, what I would like to know now is if anybody listening, what's your experience? You know, what I love to know how other hospitals run. And I always ask my travel nurses that have come from other places, or maybe my experienced nurses that have been in bigger or smaller hospitals, like, what do you guys do? Because we've had different experiences. So we've had, you know, the hospital that we worked at, we were the code response team for the whole hospital. Whereas the hospital I work at now has an actual code team that is not ICU nurses. It's other nurses and other people combined that respond to the other ones. And I love to know, what does your hospital do? Do you have a code team? Are your floor nurses it? You know, you just figure it out, you know, like, what do you got? And see what you know, around the other country, not other country, around the country. Oh my gosh, it's time to wrap it up. But what they do, you know, you never know. Grass might be greener or it might be dead on the other side.
That is true.
Who knows? All right, man. Hey, thank you for having me.
This has been amazing.
I'm so excited. Yes. All right. Well, I will give my little spiel at the end. Yeah, my words aren't happening anymore today. It's time to wrap it up. But thank you for listening. Please visit ICU. That's the letters ICUthriving.com. You can visit our Instagram with the same ICU, letters ICUthriving. Nope, just ICUthriving. Yay. Thank you, Ashley, for being on here today. And If you got feedback, leave a comment where you're listening to the podcast. Leave a direct message for Instagram, whatever you got for me. I am here for it. I appreciate it. And thank you and goodbye.